Foundation. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Pacifica Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. This week's producer was Mark Sofus. I'm Christine Potter at WDFH FM 90.3, Ossining, New York, community radio for the Lower Hudson River Valley. Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
It's the 420 Drug War News.
Traditional law enforcement approaches don't work for controlling cannabis. Most of our listeners already know this. One would think that with more than 70 years of experience, we'd have proof enough. Now comes more evidence from a team of researchers at the Institute for Criminal Policy Research at King's College London. They found that any suspected link between cannabis use and antisocial behavior was slim, if such a link exists at all. The researchers suggested that alcohol use by young people should be examined more closely because of its link to antisocial behavior. Researchers observed that the young people surveyed were aware of the potential physical and mental health risks from cannabis use and the potential for abuse, but felt those risks were manageable. Most significantly, they found that young people were not deterred by the prospect of arrest for cannabis use. The researchers concluded that increasing the penalties for cannabis use would not be likely to stop young people from trying cannabis or becoming cannabis users. Finally, young people and community members surveyed suggested that creating more opportunities and more recreation and leisure facilities for young people in local areas would reduce the number of calls authorities receive regarding antisocial behavior. A link to the report is now available through the Common Sense for Drug Policy blog at www.csdp.org. For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh, editor of DrugWarFacts.org.
The following comes to us from The Muse out of Memorial University of Newfoundland. Supporters of marijuana may finally have an excuse to smoke weed every day. A recent study in the Journal of Clinical Investigations suggests that smoking pot can make the brain grow. Though most drugs inhibit the growth of new brain cells, injections of a synthetic cannabinoid had the opposite effect in mice in a study performed at the University of Saskatchewan. Research on how drugs affect the brain has been critical to addiction treatment, particularly research on the hippocampus. And the following comes to us courtesy of the San Francisco Chronicle. Appeals court snuffs out warrantless marijuana search. Police can't enter a home without a warrant just because they see someone inside smoking marijuana, a state appeals court ruled last Friday. In overturning a Pacifica man's conviction, the State Court of Appeal in San Francisco said officers may enter someone's home to preserve evidence of a crime, but only if the crime is punishable by jail or prison. Under a 1975 California law, the court noted possession of less than an ounce of marijuana is a misdemeanor, carrying a fine of as much as $100 with no jail time even for a repeat offense. This means that police who see someone smoking can enter only if they have the resident's permission or a warrant from a judge. The whole of the drug war is a fantasy, a fabrication. Please do your part to bring it to an end. Dean Becker, DrugTruth.net.
And coming up next on Free Radio, Bathrop's Pierre's Broadside, special guest from Los Angeles, Peter Biebring of the American Civil Liberties Union, and a man speaks from jail about being falsely convicted. Stay tuned.
City on a monkey made of gold to look for Neptune's mermaids after Sidon told. A ticket back to Sirius, I know it will be mine. Cause 6 times 3 is 8 and 1 plus 8 is 9. I've been a windblown sign, searching from the east to the west. Ooh, I've been a lover
my queen. I've been everywhere and nowhere and the places in between. I've got everything that money can and cannot buy. But when I look behind me, I see it's all a lie. I've been a wind-blown child, searching from the east of the west. Ooh, I've been a lover too, always looking for the things I know by now it's you. Oh baby, now it's you. Oh baby, now it's you. Mirror of my life, it's cracking in its frame. If I could find the pieces, I would live it all again. Just to watch my life's reflection in the glass, as clear as rain.
And that was Voice of the Homeless selection, another one actually from that CD called Windblown Child. On the line with us in a timely manner is Peter Biebring. Do I have that name right, Peter?
Yes, indeed.
And you are with the American Civil Liberties Union of Southern California, deeply involved in the Jones case, the decision that came down in April of 2006 that essentially told the Police Department of Los Angeles and the city administration, you can't arrest homeless people at night in the Skid Row area. Am I giving an accurate description there?
To some extent. What was at issue in Jones was a particular rule in Los Angeles, part of the LA Municipal Code, that forbids lying, sitting, or sleeping on the sidewalk at any time, day or night. And what the court in Jones decided was that in effect was a ban on the condition of being homeless, because homeless people have to lie, sit, or sleep to sleep at some point during the day or night.
Peter, let me interrupt you just for a minute, because I think we have a caller. And this is probably on an irrelevant subject, but we're a primitive station, so let me see what he wants.
No worries.
Hi, you're on Free Radio with Peter and Robert.
Yeah, is a girl named Jackie on there?
That's going to be in about an hour, half an hour. She's going to be coming on, and she'll be coming on by phone. So just keep listening, and you'll hear her.
Oh, thanks. Hey,
all right.
Yeah, she's a friend of mine. Everything, Steve.
Right. I mean, she's got some important stuff to say. So definitely listen in and call back in about half an hour.
Okay, it's going to be on 101.
Yes.
About a half hour.
All right.
Thank you very much. Thank you, bro.
No problem. Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Back again to you. So, yeah, this is a particular code that the LA police were using to harass largely African-American homeless people in downtown Los Angeles?
Right. That's right. So what the court decided was that basically the court held and that police couldn't enforce the law. Los Angeles couldn't ban sitting or sleeping at all times, day or night. And the settlement that was reached between the ACLU and co-counsel and the city, basically the city agreed not to enforce the law at night, to allow people to sleep at night. It is enforced during the day, and of course other laws are enforced at night. So if somebody is violating some other provision of the municipal code at night, they can be arrested under the settlement.
And, in fact, there are other laws that apparently they're using, like the state penal code 647J.
Yeah, I believe it's 647E, but, yes, the unlawful lodging a statute that's being used. And I've heard some reports that actually outside of downtown, 4118D may still be used.
That's the law that's not supposed to be used.
Yeah, I have not verified that.
Now, my understanding of this was that, I mean, we were very encouraged here in April of 2006 when this decision came down, even though it was only a 2-1 decision. But it was a federal court of appeals, and it was the Ninth Circuit, which covered, what, 9 states here in the West?
Something like that. That's right.
And this actually then, for a period of time, for about a year and a half, was binding precedent for everybody within that district. Isn't that accurate?
Yes, that's right.
And I guess I know that it was influential in persuading the San Diego authorities to settle the Spencer decision, as they call it. Spencer was the lead plaintiff in a case involving a broader lawsuit against the San Diego Police Department, which sought to enjoin them from not just any enforcement of a particular law, but I guess I'm not sure if it's any and all laws, but I think it was broader than your attack in Los Angeles on this particular code. Then they got a settlement, a citywide settlement, as you did eventually. The Skid Row area became expanded citywide to the entire Los Angeles area, 10 feet away from the entrance of a building until 1,200 or so units of affordable housing was built, right?
That's right.
So the concerns we had up here in Santa Cruz were, we kept asking our local ACLU people that are not connected with yours. Every ACLU has a certain amount of autonomy, and in fact, they're under the Northern California, I guess, regional as distinguished from the Southern California, but they've always been very reluctant to get involved in homeless issues, unlike the LA ACLU, or perhaps even the regional ACLU up north, which has been somewhat more interested in these issues, I think, though I don't know that they... I guess they may have been involved in the Fresno case.
Yeah, they were definitely involved in the Fresno case involving property seizures by police and won a terrific judgment for a number of homeless plaintiffs in that case.
Yeah, we've had Mike Rhodes talking about the so-called Kincaid decision in Fresno, which stops the police from doing what our police do here in Santa Cruz. I should say our ranger, John Wallace, who... destroys property, sends out crews to destroy property after posting the site without holding it in storage. Is there a lot of property destruction going on in Los Angeles, as far as you know? And was that a consideration in the Jones case?
That wasn't a consideration in the Jones case. There has been other litigation in the past, both against the police department and also against some of the private security hired by business improvement districts that has resulted in a system where police or security are supposed to tag property, notifying the owner that it will be removed if it's not moved within 3 hours.
Uh-huh.
And if once 3 hours elapses, they take it to storage for a period, I believe, of 60 days. Now, that doesn't always happen. The police and city works downtown often do street sweeps where they attempt to take garbage off the streets, but in doing that often end up taking people's possessions. We've had a lot of complaints about possessions being taken or individuals being told that they don't really need 2 carts full of things and to take what they really need and leave the rest for them to throw away.
Sort of like going into somebody's house and saying, you don't really need what's in your garage. We're going to take everything and leave the rest of your house intact, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it may even be more true that you don't need everything that's in your garage, but
right. Well, you know, again, following this, the chronology as I remember it, we were seeking people, attorneys down here, to kind of follow in your footsteps, the footsteps of the ACLU. I guess in Carol Sobel, who initially did the writing of this.
That's right. Carol Sobel is our co-counsel on the case, but brought the case originally,
and. We were told, well, first of all, it's a 2-1 decision. It's on weak grounds because the decision was made on the basis of the fact that The police arresting someone for sleeping when there's no place legally for them to sleep is cruel and unusual punishment under a kind of the old Robinson standard of you can't arrest an alcoholic just for being an alcoholic. Yeah. There has to be some behavior other than a status, right?
That's right.
Even if you don't go to court and even there's no formal punishment by a finding of a court hearing and so forth, the actual arrest itself is a form of punishment.
That was what we argued, and one of the points that was at issue in the case. The city believed that the Eighth Amendment didn't kick in until you were actually sentenced for it. But
luckily, the two-judge majority did believe that.
That's right.
And then what happened was the ACLU and various groups came up with a tentative arrangement with the city attorney, the city manager, and other city officials, and took it to the city council in the fall of 2006 to get a settlement, but the city council rejected the settlement, right?
That is right. The city council balked at the settlement. It was a different form of settlement, but one of the things that it lacked was the vacating of the opinion as moot. That was a point that the city was insistent on. That format also lacked a provision for housing, and that's actually a very important aspect of the settlement agreement. One of the things I think that folks who opposed the settlement to the lawsuit misunderstood is it was viewed by people who opposed it as a fight for the right to be able to sleep on the streets. And what we were fighting for is the right for people who are forced by their circumstance to sleep on the streets, to be left alone and not to be arrested just because they had no other place to go. One of the things that we strongly believed and said over and over again during the course of the litigation and the public debate about the lawsuit is LA shouldn't be treating homelessness as a criminal issue, shouldn't be arresting people who are homeless. Instead, they should be addressing it in a more constructive fashion by providing the housing that LA sorely lacks, and not just emergency housing shelters, but permanent supportive housing that has the services available on-site to let people who are chronically homeless stabilize in a supportive environment.
So the city council in 2006 rejected the settlement and may then have accepted it in 2007, last spring, because, and I don't quite understand why they wanted it vacated and depublished if they weren't, you know, getting paid off by other large cities in the ninth district. I don't know. I mean, for people who don't know what it means, if the decision is depublished or vacated, nobody else can use it. So we in Santa Cruz, folks in Sacramento who are also suing, people in San Francisco who are thinking of suing, people in Portland who are considering suing, lose the protection or the potential protection of this decision. And why would the LA City Council care about that?
I am not sure of that. I can't answer that question, and I don't have a good idea why they.
Yeah, me
they
neither.
So
I mean, I don't.
But
know.
One thing I would like to clear up, though, it is true that the decision after it was vacated is no longer binding law on district courts in the Ninth Circuit. It can be cited, though. It hasn't been depublished. It can be cited as what's called persuasive authority, which means you can cite it, you can argue that the court should adopt the reasoning, but it just doesn't bind the lower courts.
Now, you've been a part of this process. You came in the summer of 2006?
That's right.
And has this been a large part of your work, a significant part of your work, Peter?
Jones specifically has not been a large part of my work, but homeless issues have been. I've been involved in other litigation regarding police practices on Skid Row and other advocacy.
Fitzgerald decision, I believe?
That's right.
And you want to tell us a little bit about that, although I want to come back to the Jones decision?
Sure. Fitzgerald has to do with unlawful stops and searches on Skid Row. We talked to an awful lot of people who told us that police officers were coming up to them asking if they were on probation or parole, and regardless of the answer, in many cases, were stopping them, handcuffing them, putting them up against the wall, searching them and their possessions, going into bags in many instances, and then forcing them to stand there in handcuffs while they, the police officers ran their names to check for warrants. And many of our declarants said they found, the police officers found nothing and just let them go. And that's, it's almost impossible to imagine that happening in an affluent neighborhood in Westwood or the Hollywood Hills, that if you were coming out of the front door of your house, an officer would handcuff you for 20 minutes, search you, and run your name. So in addition to the constitutional violation, it's just it's unthinkable that a police department would make that presumption with a more affluent.
Unthinkable, but rather standard, I guess.
Well, it's unthinkable that it would happen in a more affluent neighborhood, but it's standard practice in Skid Row.
Now, I know that I heard from homeless advocates with LA CAN, Los Angeles Community Action Network, who may call in on this show, that there was a massive crackdown on Skid Row, even as the federal courts had, after they'd found that in the Skid Row area, because that's the limited area which this Jones decision applied to until it was expanded citywide in the settlement, they started using other approaches, not just other sleeping laws, but, you know, massive drug searches and jailing people on minor offenses in order to depopulate the area.
That's right. I mean, we got complaints about a very aggressive campaign of writing jaywalking tickets, littering tickets, you name it. There's an extraordinary police presence in Skid Row. The city of L.A. deployed an additional 50 officers on Skid Row in fall of 2006 as part of what they call their Safer Cities initiative. And 50 officers for such a small area is equivalent to adding something like 1,700 officers to stations in the valley. So it's proportionally, it is by far the most heavily policed area.
Did the ACLU do anything about this in terms, or did any organization in terms of any legal action move to address this attempt to criminalize simply being on Skid Row?
Well, in terms of, I mean, the Fitzgerald case attempted to address some of the behavior that the some of the conduct the officers were engaging in terms of stopping and searching people without adequate cause. There's a couple of other lawsuits. Our co-counsel in the Jones case and in Fitzgerald, Carol Sobel, has filed a case, Quarles, that attempts to address this pattern of writing citation after citation that will go to warrant.
What's the name of this case, Peter?
Quarles.
Quarles?
Yes.
How do you spell that?
Quarles.
Okay, and that's one of Carol Sobel's cases?
That's right.
Huh, interesting. One question that's bothered a lot of us, now there's been some controversy about this, it may be a sensitive subject for you, is I know that some people at LA CAN were critical of both the ACLU and maybe if other people were involved, your ACLU, not just ours that I'm always critical of, for doing this settlement supposedly without consulting with the plaintiffs in the case and doing so in a way that essentially disadvantages homeless people all over the nine states. And you didn't make this decision, I would imagine, so I don't want to, I'm not trying simply to put you on the hot spot, but it is a question that has come up. What would be your thoughts on this?
I understand that criticism. I mean, I will say that, you know, I do speak regularly to the folks at LA CAN and to other service providers and homeless advocates in the Skid Row area, and as much as possible, certainly I try to make decisions in litigation based on the wishes of the clients, and in the case of homeless litigation, folks that are working full time in the communities that are affected. Sometimes those, you know, the decisions that we end up with are ones that are constrained by other factors and may not be the ones that we or people in the community wish for. But
I mean, for example, 1,200 units of housing for 70,000 homeless people is, you know, ridiculous. And your settlement, I believe, says that once that threshold is met, police can again begin enforcing this nasty local law about no sitting, sleeping, or lying on the street or
that
on the
is,
sidewalk.
That is what the settlement says.
So why would you agree to that? I mean, what would be the reason for doing that? Did the plaintiffs say, "Great idea, go do it," or? You know, was there some other considerations you think that might have entered in?
Well, I mean, there are always other considerations about the what would happen to the lawsuit on appeal. You know, you mentioned earlier that you understood that Jones was a weak theory. I mean, I certainly think that the Ninth Circuit decision is precisely right on the law, I don't think it's all that weak. However, it's surprising how seldom the Supreme Court and I agree on constitutional law.
Indeed.
And so, I mean, that certainly is a factor. What would have happened if it had gone up to on certiorari to the Supreme Court? What the end result of the litigation really would be. And so that was something we were factoring in.
Decision was heading for an en banc panel, right, which means a larger panel of the Ninth Circuit before it went to the Supreme Court.
That's right. That's just another step where it would have... it would have been subject to scrutiny and possibly a changed outcome. The en banc panels on the Ninth Circuit depend terribly on the judges selected.
And that was, you think that, so there was anxiety among your fellow attorneys as to whether you could win this case at the higher level?
I suppose that's one way of putting it. I mean, we tried to reach a settlement that was based on an assessment of what we were likely to get if we went forward with the suit versus what we were getting in the settlement. And 1,250 units of permanent supportive housing is a drop in the bucket, I completely agree. Although it should be noted, this isn't just the settlement calls for permanent supportive housing. It's not just low-income units. And it calls for units that are not previously dedicated to low-income housing. So
it doesn't require them to be built, though. It says the law won't be enforced until they are built, right?
That is right. That is right.
So it doesn't require them to do anything other than not enforce this particular law, which, as far as you know, is that being followed by the police, or are they even violating that?
I mentioned this earlier. As far as I know, it is largely being followed in Skid Row. I've heard some concerns that it's not being followed across the city as it should be, but I have not been able to verify those accounts.
What about the criticism that the plaintiffs were not consulted and didn't consent to the settlement?
Yes, we do our best to consult with our clients and the stakeholders in the litigation. So I understand why people have those concerns.
I mean, were they consulted or not, as far as you know?
I think that those that we were able to reach were in doing litigation with
homeless individuals. How many plaintiffs were there actually?
There were, I believe that there were four named plaintiffs. Now see, and now you're actually, because I joined the ACLU
later on,
after,
yeah.
I'm
not sure
did
how
not
many
participate in the litigation.
This wasn't a class action lawsuit, right?
No, this was a facial challenge to the ordinance.
And also, did it involve, did you seek damages or just facially to hold the ordinance unconstitutional?
Just to hold the ordinance unconstitutional.
Now, have you examined the Spencer decision in San Diego?
I have not. I'm actually not familiar with that case.
At some point, if I can, I'd love to get that to you and get your thoughts on it. Because here in Santa Cruz, we are attempting a challenge of our sleeping ban, as I've mentioned to you. And we're looking to, you know, avoid the pitfalls and also get the benefit of the value, the positive aspects of what you've gained through the Jones decision, which I think was a major step forward, don't get me wrong. It's just, you know, you have to consider the other aspects to it, too. Do you have any advice for people undertaking this kind of litigation and for homeless communities elsewhere in California and the West?
I think that the advice is just, it's difficult work and to persevere. I mean, it depends so very much on the particular case and the particular challenge. I will say that I think that one thing that helped with the Jones decision, to the extent I'm familiar with it, is that they were really good facts on the particular plaintiffs that we brought. I mean, it was an unjust law, and it was unjust when it was applied many, many times. But the cases that our plaintiffs in particular were particularly unjust. There was one individual who actually had housing and suffered from kidney issues and had to walk to dialysis, and because of his condition got very tired when he was walking and was forced to stop and rest. And it was when he was stopping and resting on a tree stump that he was arrested for violating this law on his way back from dialysis.
How long did the case take to get to the Ninth Circuit?
I believe it was about two to three years.
You originally lost it at the district level, right?
That's right.
Well, Peter, I would like to spend more time, but I have somebody else coming in at the next segment, and I really want to thank you for taking some questions. I've kind of been softballing you, but trying to throw in some what I consider to be important, but sometimes perhaps difficult questions at the same time. I appreciate your not only taking the time, but also expressing an interest in being helpful to those of us down here who are pursuing this, our own challenge to the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz.
Yeah. No problem. It was a pleasure to be here.
Any final thoughts you want to leave us with?
No, just thank you. Thank you for having me.
Hey, Peter, thank you for taking the time. Talk to you again. Bye-bye. That was Peter Biebring of the Los Angeles American Civil Liberties Union. He was, with others, were involved with the Jones case, the case that found the sleeping ban there unconstitutional, violation of the cruel and unusual punishment aspect, and then event it became settled. But apparently, he says, and this is new to me, that it was not depublished, so it can still be cited, but not as binding precedent. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hello?
What's up, Robert?
Ah, not much. Who's this?
Madison.
Hey, Madison, what's up?
Coming in from Half Moon Bay. Did you go over what was going on in the parking lot with that whining woman from Manhattan that we're sick of?
No, I haven't gone over that, but there was a bust in the parking lot. But right now I'm kind of waiting for a call from somebody else.
Are you going to go over that later?
I will be going over. I'll be playing at 7:50.
You know, that lady has been bitching about hacky sacks and frisbees.
And to answer your question, Madison, I will be going over the issue of not the the complaining woman, but about the police who came and raided the parking lot on Wednesday.
Yeah, but she's the impetus of the pain in the ass, and she just needs.
Well, I'm more interested in police. They're more of a pain in the ass, as far as I'm concerned, than one annoyed woman, or one annoyed person. But I hear what I understand your reaction.
No, she's been wanking since the 80s. We're done with her. Go to an old folks home, and you know what I mean? You don't like the noise, go to an old folks home because you're ready.
Call back, Madison.
Have a nice day.
Yeah. And, indeed, phone number here is 427-3772. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Robert Norris, and the name of the show, in case you didn't hear it, because I don't think I announced it, is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. We go till 8 o'clock, and hopefully you'll go with us. Stay with us.
PMA is negative prevention on self or anyone's health. Yo, bad attitude helps one help. So take your time to free your mind. A better today for all mankind. To stick together and help each other. Don't turn our backs on our sisters and brothers. Cause a human being with human rights. Rich or poor, yo, we're all alike. So hold up. Don't make fun of them. Oh, you didn't know. Well, I'm one of them. Just take a look at me today. Jumping on strong thanks to PMA. Yeah. Yo, won't you bring that chorus right here? You don't stop. You can't stop.
pushing carts. And I'd walk uptown while people go stare me up and down. Some would giggle and others would laugh, while others go talk trash behind my back. But that was cool because I had confidence and many other others. Yo, they wanted this, but that was right. My appearance was neat, but many people didn't know I lived in the streets. Playing out, I'll dress them, and I'd laugh at myself because I look like the rest of them. Oh, by the way, you know a person's like from his PMA. Yeah, won't you kick in the course right about here, maestro? Kick it. Yeah. It's coming, it's coming, it's coming. Here they go. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yo, check this out right here. I check it, check, check, check. To the B, to the M, to the A. Yo, positive attitude is the only way that can get me up off the ground. It picks me up when I'm feeling down. Cause every day I'm living rough, and it seems like I'm always stuck in a situation. No motivation. PMA is the only information that was given to keep me living. But I'm wrapped up just like a ribbon in this game of life. But reality is the struggle of life. But I keep moving on my way. Strength given to me through the PMA. Yeah, yeah, biggity, 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 big, big sound. I'm coming up, coming up. Yo, man, it's hard on these streets out here, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, we gotta get off these streets, but PMA got it going on. And I wanna send a word to all my homeless brothers and sisters out there. PMA is the only way to live today, and I'm out of here. Word.
And that was another cut, PMA in the House from Voice of the Homeless. And I know one listener wanted to know more details about some of the cuts from Voice of the Homeless. That's Oh My, the PMA is Coming, music and lyrics by Lewis Thomas. And if anybody has questions about this, you can call me off air at 423-4833, 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F. That's the HUFF line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, organization I work with concerned with restoring civil rights for poor and homeless people in Santa Cruz. So we have a caller, and let's see who's on the line. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hi, this is Bob Patton.
Hey there, the Human Rights Organization elder, as I recall.
I think Bernard's more elder than any of us. But
well,
anyway,
you can say that, Sonny, but I'll tell you, there we're getting up there.
We have to give recognition to the great sage, so I have to mention Bernard's name.
Now. Bashful Bernard Klitzner, yes. I take my hat off to Bernard. He's been around quite a while doing
a
this.
A great interview there with Mr. Bebring, or I can't say
it was. Peter Bebring.
Bebring, yeah.
American Civil Liberties Union. I apologize for not opening the lines up, and I could have gone for another half an hour with him, but I unfortunately have also got a couple of other things planned. I'm about to play an interview.
Yeah, I just wanted to call in and say thanks, and I said thanks for that music, too. That's really upbeat and informative music. And I, even though there are a few of us that are interested in the so boring details of court procedures and legal goings-on, I also want to thank Madison for calling in and reminding us of the reality of Hacky Sack. So it's a great program.
Hey, well, then I'll have to thank you, Madison, and Hacky Sackers everywhere.
Okay. Well, keep up the good work. I'll talk to you later.
Thank you, Bob.
Bye.
Bye-bye. So what I'm going to do now is follow up on something I probably should have followed up on some time ago, and I'm still not really very well versed in it. I have a letter here, which I received in December, December 9th, in fact, from a prisoner in jail. And I don't get a lot of letters from people in jail. And sometimes I do get a lot of letters, but this isn't one of those times. Instead, this is a letter. This is actually my second or third letter from this guy. His name is, and I'm probably pronouncing this wrong, he will pronounce it properly when you hear him because I interviewed him today, Paul Bularisi. That's probably not it, but that's how it looks on paper. He's a guy who used to be around town on his bike. He had a dog named Easy. He had a big sign on his bike about police harassment. Some of you may remember him, some of you old-timers. And I probably interviewed him in the past. I got a bunch of phone calls from him a couple days ago. I didn't know who it was. All I heard was victim of the law. It's really hard to understand who was calling in. And finally, after the seventh or eighth collect call, I gave up and answered the phone and took and accepted the charges. And we talked a bit, and I realized this guy's being shipped off to San Quentin next week. He was convicted, apparently, of an offense, and I haven't done any more research on this than listen to his account. So you've got to judge this for what it's worth there. Man may be lying through his teeth. You got to make up your own mind. But as I understand it, he was convicted of essentially trying to take a gun away from an officer when the prisoner's point of view, he was simply trying to defend himself from being over-tasered as he was being tasered by the police in what seemed like a harassment taser. He is a homeless guy, or his home was a vehicle, and I'm going to play this account that I got from him today when he called in. We also hope that his girlfriend and longtime friend will be calling in to discuss it. I talked to her earlier today, too. She has a very eloquent and very sort of both eloquent and dispassionate at the same time. She sounds like she has a calm perception of what happened. And even though she's obviously a partisan of Paul, she also is giving her own point of view on what happened. I hope she will call in and give that point of view. So here then is an interview from jail. And you can call in. I'm going to be holding calls during the interview. Once our interview is over, you can call in and make commentary if you want. And actually, I'm hoping that Jackie will call and we can talk to her first. And the phone number here is 427-3772.
I'm talking with a man calling me from the Santa Cruz County Jail. What's your name there?
Paul Robert Voorhees.
And Paul, what would you like to say? What are you in jail for? You've just been convicted of what?
I've been convicted for going for deputy's gun because he stabbed me five times in self-defense, and another deputy jumped on top of the back of me and stabbed me twice with their taser gun. Anyway, it knocked me silly, and then I was forgiven for it, and I was found guilty for self-defense, and I lost my front teeth, too, because I yelled, screamed for help while I was getting stunned six times with the taser gun from Santa Cruz County Sheriff. And I was found guilty for that, and I got sentenced to 3 years, 8 months in prison because of that unjustifiably wrong. And they didn't have a right to brutalize me in certain way with all those electricity voltages. And I thought it was very much wrong for them to do that, and I'm justifiably wrong getting sentenced to 3 years, 8 months in prison for that.
So you were accused of trying to take a gun away from a deputy. What actually happened from your perspective?
What happened?
Yeah.
Well, I got sent to the hospital where they drew blood from me forcibly, and doctor said, you know, you got excessive amounts of brutal injuries from the taser gun. I said, yeah, I know. And he looked at my lip, too, where I was yelling, screaming for help, and I lost my front teeth, too, because Deputy Smith that was on top of me stunned me with the stun gun, had me in a headlock, and I caught her one of her wristbands while I was screaming, yelling for help at the same time being tasered, and I lost my 1, 2, 3 teeth in my front lower jaw.
Paul, spell your name for us.
Paul Robert Voorhees, last name spelled Voulverice. And I'm in Santa Cruz County Jail waiting to go to San Quentin prison for the next 3.5 years.
Who's your public defender? Paul?
Hello?
Who's your public defender?
Maya Northberg.
And how did she treat you? Did you get any help from her?
I told her to disqualify Judge Stevens in the court because Stevens had the same case me earlier this year. Of the same episode, same stuff. And the DA disqualified Judge Stevenson, and Judge Stevenson had a little favor for me because he knew the truth was there.
May wait a minute. Hold it, Paul. You're saying you would have preferred to have Judge Stevens?
Well, the DA disqualified him right before the trial, and he's a spirited court judge.
Why would you have preferred Judge Stevens?
Because he had the same, because I went in front of him earlier this year with the same case.
And what happened?
He disqualified. No.
What happened when you went in front of him?
On this case?
Yeah.
On an earlier case?
Yeah.
He dismissed it.
Why did he dismiss it?
Because it wasn't good enough. I mean, it just wasn't brutality, what it was.
You mean you felt that the officers involved had acted inappropriately?
Well, yeah, they broke into my motorhome. Then when I arrived, he stunned me with his taser gun, and then they stole my motorhome.
And this was a prior case or the same case?
A prior case.
And what happened in the case that you have just been convicted on?
This case right here? Well, they came while I was calling 911 to report Deputy Sergeant Liberty, because he came by the day before and threatened me with his taser gun, told me to move my motorhome, my trailer, my van on Paul Sweet Road. And he took off. Well, the next day I was down doing work release here at the county jail. I finished that up, and I went back riding my bike with my dog on the back to Paul Sweet Road, and I found two tickets on the windshield. I went to back, I seen my back license plate was gone, and the door was broken in. I looked inside, and everything's all scattered out, so I knew it was Sergeant Liberty, Santa Cruz Sheriff Department, that broke in and vandalized my trailer.
How did you know that?
Because of the tickets on the window, and the door broken on, and the day before that Sergeant Liberty was threatening me, told me to move it, I'm going to lose it. And then I called 911 and said, this is a civil war. And I gave description and the details of the 911 operator, Sergeant Liberty, Santa Cruz County Sheriff's Department, vandalized and burglarized the motor, and I want an investigation done. 5 hours later on 911, I made two 911 calls to the same operator. 5 hours later, Sheriff Deputy Dodd came and answered, and I said, hey, see the tickets? Come here, I want to see the vandalizing and all this. Sergeant Liberty did this. And you did this too? And he said, no, but this lady over here said you were harassing her. And he whipped his stun gun out and shot me once. I looked at him, and he shot me 3 times before we both went down because he had a hold of my hand.
Now, is that where...
I moved down on the ground. It was kind of dark, and I seen something in my face. I thought it was this pepper spray. But in an incident report that he said his holster buckle's button was undone, that the attempt at me going for his gun, charges were filed. 2 months later, when I was in jail, charges of attempted murder on two sheriff deputies were filed against me in Judge Stevens' court. But Judge Stevens laughed at it, and DA disqualified him for that. And I got bound over to Judge Addict's court where he heard the case, and he said that is a weak case for me, an attempt to go for a deputy's gun, but I was found guilty for it.
What were you found guilty of?
Attempting going for a deputy's gun.
Did that happen today, or when did that happen?
This whole incident happened 8 months ago.
And when did the trial happen?
2 days ago.
And when was it concluded?
2 days ago I was sentenced. The trial was on the 20th. It was on the 20th. 19th, 18th, 17th, 16th. It happened all that week.
You're a man who lives in your van?
Huh?
Well, you were a man who lived in your van?
I was in my... I have my van hooked up to a 20-foot trailer. And it was bolted locked together. And the vandalisms were somebody... Deputy Liberty is in charge with the abandoned vehicles of the county of Santa Cruz. And he came by a day before, so I knew... It was Sergeant Liberty, because I know Sergeant Liberty for the last 20-something years, and his name used to be Bill Green, but he changed his name to Liberty just to get the sheriff deputy's job, because Bill Green's Bobby's brother killed a guy some years back here in Santa
You mean Liberty did or his brother did?
His brother, Bobby.
I see. Well, okay, what would you like Free Radio listeners to do or to go away from after hearing this? Since we're not going to be hearing from you again, probably you're going to be in San Quentin for the next 3.5 years. But I will try to, you know, communicate. If you communicate by letter,
I'll do the best I can, Robert.
What do you want Free Radio Santa Cruz listeners to do or to be aware of?
Well, Santa Cruz Sheriff's Department did investigate a homicide murder.
And what was that homicide murder?
It was a homicide murder on North Rodeo Gulch. Their body was butchered, cannibalism. And it was at a homeless person at a camp spot on Soquel and North Marion. It goes right across the street from Sweet and Nude. And
you discovered this body?
Yeah, I took a little walk down the creek, and my dog went over to the camp spot, and he stayed in there for a minute. I was expecting to hear some ruckus, some noise and something. Well, and it was nothing, so I was curious. I looked in there. I looked around, and I seen just a head and an arm.
And you recognized the head?
I recognized the head, but I don't know the guy's name. It was an older Mexican little hobo that used to dig out of dumpsters all the way up down 41st Avenue and hang out in front of Kmart when Kmart was there, or stored there with all the other Mexicans looking for work.
And when did you discover this?
Earlier last year. I can't remember the quite date.
And was what? Remember what month?
I can't remember.
And did you report this crime to the sheriffs or the police or the highway patrol or anybody?
Sheriff's Department.
And what did they do?
They came and saw it, and I showed them where the camp spot and the body, the head was, and the sheriff deputy said, this is a 187 homicide murder. And I gave him the description where I just tell you that there's some older guy, and I had a warrant out for me, so I had to go talk to another deputy and gave me a sign a ticket for OR release. And I told him my motorhome's down there in South Rodeo Gulch. If you have any more questions, you know where I'm at.
And
I never heard from them again. But then the only thing the newspaper said that. Because I thought it was like some kind of a Halloween gag. But no, it was a body, and there was no maggots, there was no flies, there was no ants on it.
And how far away was this from your trailer?
Soquel and North Rodeo Goat, right across the street from Sweet and News.
Yeah.
There's a dirt parking lot. Okay, and there's a bridge right there, and it was kind of underneath the bridge.
Uh-huh.
Not that far.
Well, no. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, my thought is, whoa.
Okay, and the sheriff's department didn't come by and talk to me anymore about it. And, you know, I thought maybe the public should know about, you know, we got a sick, psychotic, butchering people out there.
What you've told this to your public defender, right?
I told this to Maya Northberg and Petoli Jamerson. I also, too, after this grief and lack of interest through the public defenders all through the 8 months, I called John Mitzloff, and I told him about my civil petitions, about 36 letters to Washington, Attorney General, State Capitol, Assemblyman.
About what issue?
Congress,
Paul, about what issue?
About this case that I'm going to trial for self-defense because they
right.
shot me with over 5,000 watts of a taser gun.
Now, it wasn't about the issue of the body. You didn't bring that to anybody else's attention, right?
No, because I had my own matters with this trying to defend myself against Santa Cruz County Sheriff.
I got you. Paul, how can people write to you if they want to correspond with you?
Oh, I'm going to be sent to San Quentin probably next Wednesday. I have a girlfriend named Jackie Gibbons.
And we're going to wait on that because I spoke to Jackie, his girlfriend, and it's really up to her whether she wants that information put out. But if people do want to correspond with Paul, And that's an interview from jail earlier today. They can contact me. I'm Robert. And you can contact me on the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. You can also call into the studio if you've got comments or thoughts or you've had similar experiences or, any reactions to what you've heard. Again, the number here in the studio is 427-3772, 427-FRSC. You are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz. And while we're waiting for the flood of calls to come in, and my apologies, Jackie, if you're listening, for taking so long to get around to this. It was a longer interview than I expected, and I'm playing it later than I expected. Please feel encouraged to call in, because I'm watching the phone line and hoping to get some calls.
Do you know me? I'm the man who sleeps in the alleyway, haven't bathed today. Have you seen me? I'm the boy digging through the rubbish can for myself, I think. Oh, look at my face, tell me what do you see? Look in my eyes, much deeper. If you please, I'm the voice of the homeless of the world, calling out to you, what are we gonna do? I'm the voice of every homeless boy and girl, hear me now. I'm the thorn in your side, buddy, can you spare a dime? Do you care for me? I'm the woman who is really good at heart, pushing my shopping cart. Maybe someday we'll meet and won't have to pretend that we can close our eyes and there's poverty within. I'm the voice of the homeless of the world, calling out to you, what are we gonna do? I'm the voice of every home.
Thank you.
And that was the title song from Voice of the Homeless. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. The name of the show, Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. The call-in number, 427-3772. Coming up shortly, for those who are interested in Santa Cruz, at 7:15, is a critical resistance discussion series. It's happening tonight at the Loudoun Nelson Community Center, 301 Center Street. They're going to start around 7:15, go to 9:15. It's an introduction to the prison industrial complex and abolition, rather than being a lecture or talk, according to what I'm reading here from indiebay.org. This event will be more like a workshop discussion, a chance for people to become more familiar with the work that CR, Critical Resistance, does, and ask questions and converse about the prison industrial complex. The series will continue every third Thursday of each month until May, and we're still looking for folks to work with us and participate in facilitating other events, workshops, discussions in the series. So if you're interested, curious, or already involved, be great to see you tonight at 7:15, about 10 minutes. 15 minutes. All events are free. Please bring people. History, despite its wrenching pain, cannot be unlived, but if faced with courage, need not be lived again. That's a quote from Maya Angelou. And again, Loudoun Nelson Center, it's a critical resistance discussion there if you want to check that out. I also want to play for you something that I heard today very briefly. I called Representative Farr's office, that's our peaceful U.S. representative, on whether he voted, how he voted on the $88 billion appropriation, including $189 billion for Iraq and Afghanistan for the Fuhrer. And this is what I got. I'm going to play it for you now, as soon as I get this together.
Today at 3:12 p.m.
Hi, this message is for Robert. This is Julian from the Office of Congressman Sam Farr returning your phone call. Congressman Farr did vote in favor of the National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2008, known as H.R. 4986. If you have any other further questions, feel free to give us a call here at the Santa Cruz office at area code 831-429-1976. Thank you.
And I suggest people not merely give Farr a call, but frankly occupy his offices until he repudiates that vote and agrees to commit himself to vote down every appropriation coming down the pike in favor of the Iraqi war, not to mention the other 747 military bases around the globe. Without direct citizen action, we will get nowhere, and we are getting nowhere. The bombing raids over Iraq, according to Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! Today, have increased fivefold from a year ago. So the escalation continues and the bullshit gets thicker. But you don't hear any candidates talking about this at all. And I don't mean Ron Paul or Kucinich. Nobody's talking about what the U.S. government is doing right now in Iraq to murder Iraqi resistance fighters and Iraqi civilians. We're the ones who have to speak out. Again, regarding what we heard before from Paul, the guy in jail that we talked to who was sentenced to, convicted of trying to draw a deputy's gun when he claimed he was trying to defend himself from a mass tasering. I talked with his girlfriend Jackie this afternoon, as I mentioned. I kind of hoped she would call in, but she did give me permission to talk about what we discussed. And I'm going to do that since she wasn't, she chose not to call in. I think she may be a little shy about this, and she was afraid of potential retaliation. Jackie is a nurse by trade, and she was present at the incident, she said. She was subpoenaed by the defense, and then they were told that they didn't need her testimony. This kind of goes to the public defender's either incompetence or, you know, to me, I don't know, maybe they decided the girlfriend's testimony would not be particularly persuasive. But another witness to the event might have been important, but she said that she was not allowed to testify or not called to testify. For her, she described it as three brats scuffling in this incident with Paul and the two deputies. that the cops were twice as big as he was, including the woman. He said he was trying to maintain his balance. She didn't hear what was said because she was watching Paul's dog, Easy, and not standing directly next to him. She didn't know where they came up with the charge, attempted murder. I'm reading you from my notes. When there were no fingerprints on the gun or the holster, according to, she didn't specify that was the police report or the absence of such testimony in court. She says she's been friends with Paul for 4 years, and she knows he's something of a wild man. He draws a lot of attention to himself. He rides around town with a make-believe dead chicken and signs on his bike that say victim of the law. She believes it's really good not to draw negative attention to oneself, so perhaps that's one of the reasons she's not on the show. And she says that Paul's passion is often mistaken for anger. She says she's been a nurse for 28 years, raised 6 children. Her son dropped dead from diabetes in 1999. Her husband dropped dead of an aneurysm shortly after that. And her twins, quite a story, ended up in prison. Her house burned down, and she threw up her hands in the air. She became homeless, and through that experience, she said she became very humble, met a variety of people of all classes, learned a great deal, and grew spiritually from the whole situation. I wish I could have her saying this, because it was really eloquent to hear. I should have been tape recording her, but I wasn't. And you have to get someone's permission before you tape record them on the phone, so that's what I do. She thinks there's been a serious injustice done. She says Paul had a lot of problems himself in his own life. His father died in his arms. His family abandoned him. His mother founded the Impossible Restaurant. He suffered a lot of losses. He doesn't have the skills to act favorably on his behalf in these kinds of episodes. And a lot of the time, the passion he puts forth is mistaken for anger. In her travels with Paul, in Paul's motorhome, they would be stopped four days out of 7 just because of who they were. There won't be warrant checked. These are the sheriffs in Capitola and the Capitola police. She went to parts of the trial for the first day. She wasn't persuaded by the evidence that he was guilty. Of course, she saw the incident, so she came to her own conclusions as to what went down. She thought things would go a lot better, and she thought the public defender, quote, was bullshit. That's public defender defame as Maya. The first public defender ever she liked, but apparently that public defender had to be dropped out. That was Jameson Vittori, if I have the name right. She knew someone else who had Maya as a public defender who did nothing for her, and apparently she felt that Maya was essentially covering her own butt or making eloquent speeches but not carrying through. She observed the testimony from the male officer in the trial. We're again talking about Jackie, Paul's girlfriend. He was very unsure. He didn't look. A question of whether he'd even filed the reports that would corroborate what he was saying. Much longer after the event, he went to get psychological help because of the pressure of the trial, and that was the basis for their claiming some kind of injury. She looked up Paul's record in a lot of cases to get some idea, because she wanted to make sure she knew what Paul was about and was afraid she was going to be called on the stand and questioned on the past stuff. She noted the same deputy, Haynes, continually was involved in what may have been harassment episodes with Paul. And he was homeless for a long time. He was in custody since May 30th, and he was held in custody without being able to plan his own trial. And I've been told by a knowledgeable attorney that the county council, in order to cut the budget for the jail, has denied access of homeless prisoners, or not homeless prisoners, all prisoners in the Santa Cruz County Jail to the law library. So they don't have that kind of access anymore. So that, of course, is the kind of thing that I got extremely angry about when I was in jail. Up in San Francisco, and I was jailed for serving people free food with Food Not Bombs back in 1996. And we circulated petitions, getting 100 prisoner signatures on it, demanding access to the law library, demanding adequate treatment for HIV people, but the law library particularly. I'm If you have any thoughts or concerns about this case, the case of, and I'm going to get his name right, Paul Bolleries, then give me a call on the Huff line. Leave me a message, and I'll get back to you, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. If you want to call in here, you can, and the phone number is 427-3772. If I missed your call in the last few minutes, please try again. The phone was muted for purposes of the first call-in, and I've got the phone unmuted again. So feel free to give me a call. What I'm going to do now is play some street interviews that are going to lead directly into the parking lot panic, harassment, and intimidation that happened when police arrived yesterday to clear parking lot 4, the Drummer's parking lot, the parking lot next to the Farmer's Market, the parking lot behind Taqueria Vallarta and Logos, of Drummer's, using Mayor Ryan Coonerty's parking lot panic law, as I call it, his parking lot and garages trespass law. But first, a few other interviews to kind of not forget the traditional content of my show.
So we're out here. Anybody got a watch? Know what time it is? So 6:30 on January 5th, Saturday evening, out here at the enclosed area between Alfresco's and Cafe Campesino. It's not raining, but it has been raining a lot in the last 24 hours. We're talking with
Troy.
Who?
Troy.
I'm sorry, Troy. And Troy, there's been some discussion about people being driven into the rain in the last 24 hours.
Yes, sir.
What have you seen or what have you heard?
Well, I know there's one individual friend of mine. He's suicidal. He walked up to the police and he said he wanted to go to the mental institution here because he couldn't do it anymore. And they said, get the fuck away from us. You're drunk. They said, you're drunk, dude. And he wasn't really that drunk.
Was he really?
But he went out for help and they said no.
When was this?
An hour ago.
So it wasn't raining at the time. You gotta wait till it's raining hard, right?
Sweet.
Any reports of people being driven out into the rain?
My friend here slept underneath the bridge, the parking lot here, and they woke us up at 6 in the morning.
And so we were violating the parking lot panic law.
Yeah. But it wasn't raining at the time.
Yeah,
you got in there after we got out in the rain and got soaked. Had to go to the laundromat.
Your friend is in a wheelchair.
No legs.
With no legs. What's her name?
Teresa.
And is there a reason why? Have you guys thought about the armory, or is that not an option?
Too many wing nuts there.
Say again?
Too many wing nuts there for me. That's my personal opinion.
You know, I mean, would they allow people with wheelchairs in the armory or not?
Sure, I'm sure they would.
I mean, you know that she's actually been allowed in the past or not?
Yeah, I'm certain of that. It's a long ways, and
anybody else? You were driven out of the parking lot at 6 a.m. in the morning,
probably.
Potentially, and then you got soaked thereafter.
Mm-hmm.
Were you engaging in criminal behavior, drinking, sleeping without a permit, perhaps?
Sleeping illegally. Sleeping without a permit.
Well, the credit card will give you all the permission you need.
She's taking off.
I got one. I don't think so.
Has anybody else seen harassment, like people being driven into the rain the last day or two? That's good. I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah. It's
not going to go anywhere over the next.
Not since last night.
What happened last night?
They were just pushing everyone off out of the audience.
Did you see that actually yourself, or did you hear about it?
No, I saw it.
And where did you see it happen?
Right here on Pacific.
And was it cops, private security guards, somebody else?
Cops.
And how many times did you see it happen?
Once.
And what front of what business?
Borders.
And about how long, about what time of day was that?
Probably like 2 or 3 in the afternoon.
Say that again?
2 or 3 in the afternoon.
And how many people were forced into the rain?
5 or 6.
Okay.
That's it.
Alrighty. And What do? Did they just get wet, so much, so to speak?
Pretty much.
Did you hear the cop talking to them, and did he say anything, or how many cops were involved?
It's two.
Did you know who they were?
No, I don't.
Okay.
That's all I have to say, brother. Thank you.
We've been talking with?
Greg.
Thanks, Greg. What's up this morning? Talking with Montana. Hey, Montana, you say cops are pretty mellow?
My name's not Montana.
I'm sorry.
I'm Bones.
Sorry, Bones. You look like Montana. I guess I got to get a pair of glasses.
Yes, it's all right. Yeah. It's all right. The cops have actually been kind of cool with us right now.
And you've been on Pacific Avenue and not hassled under awnings and so forth?
Not too bad, though. Not this season.
Well, that sounds good.
Yeah.
You've been outside, you pretty much have been around. You keep your eyes open.
Oh, yeah. I've been out with my ears open, yes. And they've mostly been leaving us alone this snowstorm, this storm.
Mostly, or do you notice some exceptions to that rule, or no? Or entirely?
Well, I'll tell you, they do pick people out. They will run them in.
Did you notice them clearing people out from under awnings at all?
Not too bad, no.
And did you notice people actually under awnings that were left alone?
Yeah, actually, I've been one of them.
What awning were you using so that we can send the police there later in this? I noticed people under the Eco Goods or Bloom awnings when I was down there. They weren't hassled when I was there anyway. But I did hear one guy was hassled at the corner of the Flower Video Store, the corner of Cathcart and Cedar yesterday afternoon. So.
That might be true, yeah. It might be true.
Yeah. Well, again, thank you. We've been talking with Bones.
Bones.
Of course.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other reports from the street?
Yeah, we could use some snorkels.
There you go. Thank you.
You know the nearer your destination, the more you slip sliding away. Slip sliding away. Slip sliding away. You know the nearer your destination, the more you slip sliding away.
It's the 15th of January, around 10:30 in the morning, up here in Felton, on the Felton Community Deck, which is in front of Scooby's DVD and Constant Creation. There's a new sign, actually not that new, many months old sign, Felton Community Deck, open dawn to dusk, no alcohol and no smoking or tobacco products. Aha! We have a criminal here, products.
Oh, yeah. I'm in the room.
Yes. Well, you're a criminal, but we'll overlook that for the moment. What's your name?
Ben Priest.
And you say that there's been some harassment here recently?
Well, you know, my name is Ben, actually. Yes.
And what sort of harassment has that been?
It's like this woman comes up, she's invasive and autocratic. I'm here, I've been here since 53. I'm just sitting down doing whatever I do. Mm-hmm. Other than that,
what does she do? What does she then do when she comes up to you?
She's ragged.
What does she complain about?
Well, I guess there's some sort of a, you know, the what do you call it? Foot traffic.
Say that again.
Foot traffic.
Foot traffic. So, is she object to your smoking, or what is her objection?
Her objection is life.
What if she doesn't come up to you and say, "I object to life"? But what?
This is a conversation, for those who aren't really picking up on it, with some folks sitting on a sort of an outdoor patio in Felton, above Santa Cruz, a town about 6 miles northeast of Santa Cruz, where on the main drag on Highway 9 near Scooby's Video and the White Raven coffee shop, there is a, a platform where people sit, and now they've recently been told they can't smoke there and they can't be there after dark. And that's what I was inquiring about, and that's what this man is talking about.
What you said?
No, this is illegal. You can't smoke here, you can't drink here, well, blah, blah, blah.
So she catches you with a beer on a hot day and...
No, I don't have a beer. I don't have an open beer. I don't do that.
Right. But you do have an open cigarette, you dirty criminal, you.
Oh, my God. Okay, nicotine offense.
And you also have a cup of coffee. That's drugs, you know.
Beer in there.
So what about other... How are the sheriffs enforcing this very vigorously, or what's the story? Who?
Only one. Only one. This lady.
What is the name of the sheriff?
No, I don't know. I wrote it down someplace and I don't know. I'm like you. I don't remember.
Well, we're going to be getting back to you for a full report. We've been talking with
Ben Priest.
Thank you, Ben.
Benny. Benny.
Sorry, Benny.
My name is Benny.
No, that's good. I accept that. Any comments from you, sir? Sitter by?
Nick.
Thanks. Downtown in front of the Del Mar. And as has been noted at Huff meetings, today is January 16th, 2008, in front of the Downtown Information Center. Musicians are playing with their guitar cases open within 10 feet of a business, albeit a closed business, but still a business. Good news for those who want to see an end to the downtown ordinances. And I'm here at the Farmers Market listening to a remarkable musician, probably one of the few allowed in the Farmers Market, en route to the drum circle to observe a cop watch. One people, one world, one love, says his huge twanged instrument. Taking down a buck here.
And now we get into the farmer's market, I should say the drum circle next to the farmer's market, which was raided yesterday by the police, and dozens of people were essentially relocated, I would even say kidnapped, under a threat of force by the police department, who sent five officers to move everybody out of the parking lot with the threat of citations. And there's a coverage of this incident and some photos of it on IndieBay.org, Santa Cruz Indie Media, and the name of the story is Alert: Drummers Being Hassled at Drummers at Farmers Market. Number of interesting stories, some interesting photos, and I think that there'll soon be some video of this, because Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, a group I work with, was down there trying to keep an eye on what's going on. The week before, there had been similar surveillance by the police. Officer Aldrich double-parked his car and rode through the parking lot several times and double-parked again prominently in the same place, but did nothing, I think in part because there was a large presence there of not only drummers, but also the Trash Orchestra was there, a group called the Trash Orchestra, there to support. And they apparently are maybe coming back next week as well. And the there's an interesting discussion of the whole issue, as I said, on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, and also a somewhat off-topic, ignorant, uninformed discussion in the Good Times today, which gets its information from Zach Friend, the police department spokesperson, and quotes, and doesn't even quote the current law on the subject. The law in the parking lots has changed. It has become harsher. It is police no longer have to warn you, though they're choosing to do so at this time because they'd rather have you surrender your own rights than have to steal them from you. They'd rather just have you voluntarily kind of go into the appropriate, I don't want to say the camps, but let's say they want you to surrender the rights that you previously thought you had in order to, it's an easier thing for them to do than having to have to arrest you and cite you and take you to jail. But of course, if they have to do that, then it becomes a real public issue, and the claims of those who support the parking lot panic law, as I call it, that it's just a very easy law, that there's no problem, that people don't mind having space stolen from, they don't mind a cop coming up and tapping on the window of their car and saying, excuse me, ma'am, you can't read a book in your car, you've been here for 16 minutes, that's perfectly okay with our community, according to Mayor Coonerty and Vice Mayor Matthews and the rest of the city council. Everybody on the council voted for this law. Its expansion, I should say, except for Porter and Rotkin. I think last time they voted for it when it was applied to the more dangerous parking garages. Of course, there was no finding of any kind of danger in terms of any meaningful police stats, but it was the perception of danger, just like perhaps the perception of unsightly homeless people allows the passage of laws that criminalize everybody in order to make sure that they don't get thrown out by the courts, but then the police use them selectively to go after homeless people. Anyway, on with the audio tape.
Well, we are approaching the drum circle. I'm not very loud. I would find this impossible to endure, although we got some complaints. One woman complained from the cheese area last week. She didn't complain to the police, but she did complain. And here we are, drum circle. We got one guy sitting down with some bongos, three dancers, three big bongos, a guy with sticks, a guitarist, a tambourine player, and the inevitable Suzanne. People are dancing. Do you have a permit to dance? Madam, can you show me your permit?
Well, I don't think that we should have to have a permit to dance.
We have permission from the governor himself.
Dance or die!
There you
dance
go.
For everyone!
This is clearly shocking violation of the parking lot panic law. I'm going to have to make notes and turn them into my local police officer. We're talking with
Randolph Aiden Tolley III.
Randolph, we're here near the drum circle, and you said you called me over because something rather alarming has happened to you.
Yes, the police have stolen my cell phone. Well, they attacked me. They put me in jail. They took my pot paperwork out of my property. They took my cell phone and my walkie-talkie and threw them away. When I got out, I don't have my pot paperwork. I don't have my cell phone. I had to buy a new cell phone. And I don't have my walkie-talkie.
Now, tell me, when were you arrested?
Last Friday.
What were the circumstances? Describe them for me.
Well, I have a search and seizure clause. So they come and search me. So they said, "We're going to search you, Mr. Tolley." I said, "No problem." They said, "We're going to put you in handcuffs to search you." I said, "No, you don't need to do that. I'm not going to wrestle you because my elbow was shattered and it has pins in it and it hurts me a lot to be in handcuffs." But they didn't care.
Who were the officers?
There was two sergeants and there was two sergeants there and I don't know the officers' names.
There were three people.
But who was it?
I don't know.
Aldrich was one of them.
Right.
And there was another one. There was two. There was Aldrich and four other cops.
And where did this happen?
Right up here on the avenue. And I have lots of witnesses that saw
what time of day?
Police tackle me on to the ground.
What time
of
day?
And I was not wrestling them or anything. What time was it, Larry, when this happened?
7 o'clock, right after we got food at Elm Street.
Yeah, right after we got food at Elm Street.
Friday night.
And was it a, what were the circumstances? Did one cop come up to you first or all four?
They all surrounded me.
And again, you were in front of what store, more or less?
I was in front of, I don't know. I don't know. I was by the cookie company. I was beside by a specific cookie company.
You said there were a lot of witnesses. How long did this whole process take?
Here's a witness right there. I'll
ask him in a moment.
He saw it. Destiny. Destiny! Did you see the police attack me or tackle me?
No.
Okay. No, well, I know of a few other people that did, but...
And did the crowd respond? Was there a crowd of people watching or a few people watching?
Yeah, there was a whole crowd of people. Downtown was so packed.
And was there any reaction from the people?
No, they just walked on by.
How long were you held in jail?
I was held in jail till Tuesday.
And how were you treated in jail?
I was put in isolation, and I was heavily drugged.
What were you charged with?
I'm not even sure of the charges. And I think it was, when you don't let them search you, they call that resisting arrest. And I was willing to let them search me. I told them that several times.
But not with handcuffs.
Search me. I just didn't want to be in handcuffs. You can look through everything. I just didn't want to be in handcuffs. So they tackled me and took me to jail. And when they got me in jail, they took a half ounce of my marijuana from me, my medicine.
Now, what do you use your medicine for?
because I have head, neck, and back injuries, and I'm always in pain because I was in a motorcycle accident in 92 where I spent a month in a coma, and I'm in constant pain. I'm going to see the doctor tomorrow to get regular. I can get prescriptions of pain pills, which they don't like you to have, but I can get prescriptions for them because I'm always in pain.
What are you on probation and search clause for?
Because they found me when I had a little bit of mushrooms, and the judge said, if you want to get out, I don't know. They I didn't have a lawyer. The reason I have lost my Fourth Amendment right is because I'm poor, and I can't afford a lawyer.
You know about the upcoming Know Your Rights seminar, 1 to 3 on Saturday in front of Cinema 9, right?
No, what is that?
That's going to be a role-playing where you're taught how to respond to police demands. Of course, if you have a clause, you know, you have to, in essence, submit to a search. But as you say, have you examined, I don't know what the details are, whether they're required or allowed to handcuff you, or whether you can point out, if you carry some documentation that indicates you have a medical condition that where you'd be injured by handcuffing. Of course, it seems to me you could sue them if you ever find a lawyer, of course, or
they don't care. No, the police don't care about me. Three or four police officers have told me to move out of this town. Well, I get my SSI here. My counselors, my mental counselors are here. A lot of people in this town are my friends, so I don't see why a police officer tells me to move, because I won't move. Now they're harassing me.
Now,
Is there some way where I could get with some other people? Because I believe a lawsuit should be taken over this. I believe I'm entitled to something for this.
Well, I'll give you the name of an attorney who is overworked and who might be able to help you, might not. I don't want to raise your hopes too much. As you know, the Constitution is sort of like a bunch of shredded paper these days.
Shredded paper?
Right. They put the Constitution through the paper shredder, in other words. It's hard to find your rights.
Yeah, I know. You got to have a lawyer.
Man. Well, we're going to try to defend our rights here today at the drum circle if they come to harass us. At least that's what I'm here to document. But it's easier if you know the law or if you have a lawyer. Anything more you want to say to the free radio audience? Is it okay to play this on free radio?
Yes, it's absolutely fine to play this on free radio. And the police here, I want to ask them the next time they come see me, when's the last time you went and arrested a real felon? Someone who does robbing someplace with a gun. They're a bunch of chickens. Pardon my French.
Now, yeah, I hear you. One last question. Now, you say that some of your property disappeared. The marijuana disappeared in jail, and the other stuff disappeared before jail?
Well, no, they charged me with the marijuana, but my medical paperwork from the doctor disappeared. My cell phone disappeared. My, what else?
Prior to reaching jail or after it was...
No, going to jail, my stuff's disappearing out of my fucking paper, out of my property.
So when you were booked, you didn't have that stuff?
I didn't have my phone. I didn't have my medical paperwork. And what else did they take? My walkie-talkie. I'm not entitled to own a CB radio, apparently.
When is your court date?
I think they've already ran it through, and for the time I've already served, the judge already, I served 5 days, and that was for what just happened.
So you pled guilty to the offense, whatever the charge?
I said no contest.
I got you. What was the offense? Resisting arrest?
That, and I believe it was just that. The marijuana, I don't think, was involved.
But they didn't give it back?
No, they didn't.
All right. Again, we've been talking with...
A poor person who has no rights, Randolph Faden Tully III.
Thank you, Randolph.
Oh, by the way, my grandfather was a lawyer and a judge in Washington, D.C., Frank J. Mahoney. But I see that gives me no love here.
Sorry about this, and thank you for giving us your story, man. So it's about 4:05. The drum circle is smaller than last week. But, hey, Kuna Bombs is here! Yay! Hey, all right. So
So, how are you doing? How are your eardrums going?
What's up?
How are your eardrums?
Fine.
And what kind of delicacies does Food Not Bombs have today?
We have black beans with banana and fried banana. We have a rice kind of stir fry with veggies and onions and curry.
You got three empty buckets to me, man.
Yeah, three empty buckets. Third one, a little bit of salad left with an avocado vinaigrette.
You've been here for more than 15 minutes, right?
Not at all.
Is that it? Your cupboard is bare?
Almost. Yeah, there's probably one or two more people that we can serve.
And we've been talking with
Jack Rusk.
Ably assisted, or should we say supervised by
Ethel Snell.
And somebody else who was not giving her name. So the criminal group Food Not Bombs and, of course, the criminal drummers are here in violation of the parking lot panic law, luckily being observed by three police officers and awaiting their soon-to-be-awaiting trial, as are the rest of us. 4:35, Coral and I are standing in front of, the electric meter room of the building next to Logos, the big building on the corner that houses the taqueria, here still in the parking lot, observing a squad car 128 and three police officers, Officer Aldrich, and I believe it's Sergeant Flippo, but it may be another officer here, doing their fine job in the parking lot of surveilling and keeping an eye on the drum circle. One wonders why they don't jump on board and do some drumming themselves. Of course, that may happen to our chagrin soon. The sun is dropping low on the horizon. The entire parking lot is almost in shadow now. People are still coming and going to the farmer's market, but it is the winter, so there's not a lot of crowd here at the farmer's market.
Mike Daly. Oh.
And Coral has the occasional comment, which is a little inscrutable to me, but then what is inscrutable to me may be quite scrutable to others.
Johnny.
We have a passerby here. Sir, you see our three police officers. Looks like standing by the back of their squad car.
They work, you know. These people are just having fun. They get paid to have fun.
You're talking about the police officers.
Exactly. What else?
Well, they're guarding the safety and health of our city to protect and serve. Haven't you heard that motto before?
Oh, do you think that? I don't think so.
I don't think that much. No, not in this case.
They get them paid. That's all.
They get paid, that's for sure. But they're also engaging in making sure that, see, it's illegal to be in a parking lot now for more than 15 minutes. But for some strange reason, they've allowed people to continue to be in a parking lot, mainly because they don't want to confront the crowd, is my thought. Police officers guarding your rights, making sure that drummers don't drum. Well, actually, they aren't doing that, but they are. They have done that in the past couple of weeks. I should say three weeks ago and 4 weeks ago. Or no, 2 weeks ago and 3 weeks ago. So.
Could it be they're waiting for the press to leave the scene?
Could be they're waiting for you, Coral, and your video camera to take a powder, as we say.
Powder it. Well, yeah, I'd take a powdered donut.
Yeah,
they'll take a sugar donut.
Indeed. A donut for all of us is what I say. Suzanne, you're a drummer. You got some information for us. What's cooking? Okay.
They're going right now.
Okay. Coral?
I'm here. I'm following you guys.
Okay.
I know. You're leaving
right now. I'm not going to do this right now.
You haven't heard anything, but you're concerned.
No, they told us that we were disobeying their 15-minute...
They already warned you?
Yeah, somebody who wouldn't talk to them. But now they said they've been watching us for about a half an hour. Now they're going to hit us with their 15-minute ordinance right now. Are you going
to? Here we go. Let's go, Coral. Let's go. So the three officers are approaching the assembly to warn people around the 15-minute ordinance. And we're about, I'd say, 30, 40, 50 people. They're approaching three of them together. And we have Officer Aldrich over here. And it looks like some kind of a parole check or a probation check is happening here.
Sergeant Flippo is examining a gentleman's ID, and Officer Hansen is looking on. Sergeant Flippo is giving a warning and filling out a card. And it appears that the officers are documenting the fact that they are making a warning here. And there's two more officers have arrived. One officer is putting on his blue gloves. These are, looks like Hispanic officers who have come in from the other side of the parking lot. So we now have five police officers here. Drummers are continuing to drum. Not Bombs is largely fed, but is still here. And I'm keeping an eye on the situation. Hi, what's happening? Looks like warnings have been given out here, but I'm not quite sure for what. What are you being warned about?
We have ordered a park. I just had a meal.
Right. So the officers have told you that you can't assemble here in the area.
No.
Okay. I see.
I'm allowed 3 hours for a performance here, but part of that parking lot rule.
Unfortunately,
as long as it's a performance.
Well, actually, there's no such provision in the parking lot rule. The parking lot.
Did they change it?
No, they just never put that in. There is supposed to be.
I was at the meeting, the city council meeting, where they made the law.
Yeah, I hear you. Me too. Yeah, that wasn't my recollection, but I hope you're right.
I watched them. There's a loophole, if you want to call it that, and it says that
if you get a permit,
3 hours.
What you need to do.
No, they were talking about. I think it was for the guy.
So let me interview you on what happened. What just happened to you? What's your name?
I was Aiden. He came up and asked me for my ID. He told me I couldn't stand there. I was motoring.
And are you going to hang out more? Are you going to leave?
I'm going to leave.
Okay. Thank you.
I want to be here because it's always safe to motor after 15 minutes.
Yeah, I know.
And they say that green sign over there states it right there on the green sign.
Yeah, but they can't selectively ticket one person. I mean, they have to. Taking them all. I mean, we're all here, you know.
That's true.
It's not fair to select one person.
Hey, Sergeant Flippo.
Hi. Are you going to see in the parking lot?
Well, I'm actually engaged in free speech activity. I'm giving out information about Cop Watch. So, unless you can give me a posted place to do it, that's my intention at the moment.
Okay.
I don't know what I'm not sure if I'm going to say or not.
Well, the ordinance does define the parking lot as a place to park a bike or a bicycle or to walk across.
This is a police officer. I think it's Sergeant Flippo warning me that I'm in violation of the law.
So we are out here giving warnings as far as about being in the parking lot beyond those intended position permissions. So you do have a right for your free speech, so you can't be loitering in the parking lot for more than 15 minutes.
Well, there is a...
The question arises how one can have free speech if one can't stand in the place where one wants to be able to give it. It's kind of contradiction, and also the issue is not so much people loitering in a parking lot as officers intimidating a public assembly in a previously public place.
Provision of the code, which you probably know, which states that there is a free speech area in parking lots, which as posted allows people to be here. And since no such areas are posted, there are no free speech areas, hence any area is a free speech area until such an area is posted. You're required to have such an area.
Okay.
That's my understanding of the ordinance.
Well, I'm going to document my advisement to you.
Okay. I appreciate that.
Do you have a mailing address, an address I can...
Now, here the appropriate thing is to simply look at the officer and say, am I free to go? And move away from him and not give him any further information, or her. But I was engaging in dialogue and forgot this vital piece of information, which will be part of the forum, or I should say training workshop, that will be happening from 1 to 3 on Sunday in front of the Cinema 9, I believe it is, at Cooper and Pacific, 1 to 3 on Saturday. That's the Know Your Rights seminar. I recommend you go to it. Check it out. I understand there's going to be a particular section which will involve training for how to deal with police officers who are confronting homeless people, not just how to have the police officer let you go, but how to let the police officer let you stay. Anyway, more from the police assault on the farmer's market. I use the word assault because they're using the threat of kidnapping and robbery, or we might say arrest and fining, to drive people out of the places they have the right to be in under the Constitution, not under the Coonerty laws.
And Sergeant Lippo is examining my card and documenting a warning to me about being in the parking lot for more than 15 minutes. Is that correct, Sergeant?
That is correct.
I don't need to give you any more information, officer, unless you're actually making an arrest, and even then, you know who I am. I'm on your records.
Here's a voice in the background that is making what sounds like a reasonable argument, what actually is a very fallacious argument. Talking to city council, although it's useful if you have hundreds of people or lots of money, is generally fruitless in terms of restoring civil rights to poor people. You have to get the power first. So the woman who's advising people to do this is actually kind of doing the job of the police for them. That is to say, helping to clear the parking lot and break up any possible solidarity that people may have. I don't think she's an agent. I don't think she's maliciously intended. But that's the impact of what she's doing, which is to advise people, don't keep asserting your rights. Just go wait for the city council to give you an okay before you assert your rights. This is maybe a prudent course if you wish to avoid any kind of confrontation, but it's unlikely to get your rights back. Your rights will get back if you all stand together. That's been my experience in the past, at least in some cases. You also may have to suffer some price to get your rights back. And as I understand it, next week some people are going to come back to the farmers market drum circle and attempt to regain their rights by at least the drummers have their rights and the right of the people to listen to the drummers and the right of the people to chat and hang out as they have traditionally done for decades in the past.
No, it's not about that at all.
You think you shouldn't be doing my
opinion?
Maybe you could
have been. No, it's not the law. It's not about it. Not personal.
Yeah.
It's a process.
You're enforcing a new law. If we want to change it, we should help you until we can.
Exactly. That's I appreciate that. Thank you. So, I'm sorry, your last name was off.
The man who said exactly, of course, was Sergeant Flippo, that he appreciated the help from the citizen who was helping people to leave the parking lot.
You're not required to give your name if you don't want it.
That's okay. I made a good decision.
Because it's your right not to give your name. That's why. Well, it looks like the folks are kind of moving on.
I agree.
And they're moving instead to Pacific Avenue, where there'll be more complaints.
I'm making everybody stop.
Oh, no, we're just moving.
The police are harassing people here, and people are getting a little nervous. So that's what's going on, folks.
Thank you.
You're not harassing us.
You've done an excellent job.
You're not required to give your name or address. And harassment is happening under color of law.
Is it selective enforcement to be only giving some people tickets?
Yes, but if they're giving as many people as they can tickets, then they're not selective enforcement. And one can see them kind of moving through the crowd methodically. So
there's no way we can really resist it.
Yeah, you can say, no, I'm going to ignore this and put them through the trouble of having to cite and arrest everybody. This law will only work if people cooperate. This only works if people cooperate with them, folks. If you don't cooperate, the law does not work. But you do have to risk a citation or potentially an arrest. That's the downside. What's your name?
I don't want to get into it.
What do you think of it?
I think this is ridiculous, and I think it's the same thing that happened like 10 years ago.
Is that what happened 10 years ago?
Yeah, they kicked everybody out, and they busted everyone for selling pot.
Right. So people are apparently consenting to leave the area. Coral... Can you document the fact that I'm walking off the... I will. Can you document the fact that I'm walking off the parking lot and then walking back?
Okay.
I'll be right back, Jessica.
Hey, Robert.
So what I'm doing now is I'm walking off the parking lot and then walking back on.
What about all the people living?
Hello.
Hello.
And I'm walking over to Farmer's Market side of the parking lot. Walking off. I'd like some witnesses. I'm off the parking lot. You, sir. You're a witness. I'm off the parking lot. All right. You witness I'm off the parking lot? You see me off the parking lot?
What about those people? They don't get any
right.
tickets.
You see that I'm off the parking lot, right?
Okay. Then I'm off the parking
lot. Now I'm on the parking lot again.
All right. Okay. Just go.
Now, the theory of that was that you're only allowed 15 minutes to retrieve or park your vehicle, but it's actually a little unclear, and I guess the claim can be, you know, actually you're not really even allowed 15 minutes. You have to be in the process of parking or retrieving a vehicle to have any legitimate purpose in the parking lot except for walking directly through. That's the current law that Mayor Coonerty gave us, along with his father's much-beloved downtown ordinances and the entire city council's sleeping ban that criminalizes people at night after 11 o'clock at night for sleeping when there's no legal shelter in Santa Cruz for 95% of the homeless population. Instead, $97 fines are an option. We're going to play a little bit more of this, then we're going to go directly into From the Cream to the Dregs as Uncle Dennis comes into the studio, which should be shortly. If you have questions about any of this, give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Come to the Human Rights Organization meeting on Saturday from 2 to 4 at 131 Front Street at the Firefly Cafe, or first check out the Know Your Rights form down at Cooper and Pacific across from the Cinema 9, where that is always interesting and fun to watch mock cops give mock tickets and teach you how to engage in real resistance. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Here's a bit more of the aftermath of the police clearing the drum circle, which then moved to Pacific Avenue, but was much smaller, of course. And, of course, probably more of a nuisance to those who didn't want to hear drums because they were in the middle of everything. Perhaps they should have moved to Coonerty's bookshop because he's the author of this law.
Don't bring the cops here.
Don't push
them. We don't care about your business here because the cops are here to watch them.
Yeah, I don't know if I have anything.
You're full of bullshit.
Okay. It's fucked up.
You are full of bullshit.
But
talking with?
Yeah, Jeff Smith. If you want to know more information, I could tell you.
Go ahead, Jeff.
I talked to the police, and they said that there's some new law voted by the city council,
it's
not
parking
the voters.
Parking lot panic law.
I understand. And then, I would recommend that maybe put this up to the voters to decide whether this is
All you need is about $40,000.
No, I understand. I'm just telling you what I heard.
And the best thing for people to do is to resist it. If you have 50 people who won't leave, they won't go in after you. That happened
last week.
I understand.
Yeah. So,
so the other option is to get a permit.
That's another option.
Because
that's
this
true.
Is a permitted event over there at the flea market. I don't know why we can't walk in there and play the flea market.
You can, although the flea market people might object because they might consider it interfering with their business and they've rented the space.
Sure, I understand. But, you know, that's another option to get a permit, whether that costs money or not. I don't
know. So the police now have the right to assemble, but the people do not. Interesting turnabout here.
And we can assemble anywhere but in a parking lot, I guess. So
and
it seems directed at this drum circle.
It's in this instance it is, but it actually is directed against anybody in any parking lot anywhere in town based on the kind of paranoia of the merchants and their desire to clear people out of the parking lots and to give the police increased powers. That's my...
Yeah, no, I understand. I understand the implications of it. I'm just trying to tell you what I heard from the police. And
right, well, you can't... What the police say, what the reality is, are often two different things. They're giving you part of the picture, but, you know...
No, I just asked them what their deal was.
Right, I know.
And that's what they said.
Yeah.
So they said we can assemble anywhere but a parking lot. Any city park, any sidewalk, as long as we're not obstructing.
Not after dark. You can't assemble in a park at all.
Oh,
all
yes,
parks are closed after dark.
Again, right. I'm just telling you what they said, and I agree with your position.
Yeah.
You know, I
either.
Think we should have a right to assemble.
I don't know.
As per the Constitution of the United States.
Right. Well, the Constitution doesn't mean much in Santa Cruz, but under Mayor Coonerty, who's...
Yeah.
In
the U.S., it seems, these days.
Well, but I'm concerned about... Yeah, you can congregate it, but don't block the sidewalk.
As long as you don't block, I guess.
Comments about this from you folks? Were you listening to the drum circle?
Not particularly. I'm not super into drum circles, but I am into food nut bombs, and obviously it's fucked that the police are coming and trying to tell people to leave.
Yeah? What's your feeling about
it? I think it's ridiculous. I heard about, the jaywalking tickets that they're giving out to.
Say that again?
Jaywalking tickets.
Oh, really?
I was just in the newspaper. But I think it's cops what... I don't know.
We'll find out what's going on. I'll be right back. Thank you.
Yeah, my nose getting cold. What do we do?
So what's your name?
My name's... I'd prefer not to say.
Okay, give me a pseudonym. Spiky?
You know what? It's Shaw.
Okay, Shaw. So what do you think about this five police officers to run off a drum circle approach here?
Well, honestly, I mean, you know, as it was put by a friend of mine, you know, every cop in Nuremberg was just following orders, and that's true. Basically, we need to not have our constitutional rights eroded because what do we have? Community suddenly becomes illegal on the whim of the local merchants, and it's a bad precedent, and it needs to not be allowed to happen. So that's partly why you have so many people showing up on behalf of the right to gather and have such things as a drum circle and serve ourselves a free picnic in public.
Thank you, Shaw.
Yes, sir. That's
the name.
That's right. Bernard. Yeah.
And that's it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Coming up next, from the cream to the dregs with your very own Uncle Dennis. Hey, more questions about this, you can check IndieBay.org. Santa Cruz Indie Media has an interesting discussion and some video on it. Or you can come down yourself and check it out next Wednesday. Observe your public serpents in action. The police force restoring law and order for cars and bicycles and removing people from the parking lot who are engaged in drumming activity. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I will be back on Sunday at 9:30 in the morning, or who knows, maybe even before that. See you then, or perhaps hear you then, or maybe talk to you then.
Well, I'm Uncle Dennis, and you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1, and we'll take Jimmy off the stage right there. Your name of this show is From the Cream to the Dregs, and for the next 3 hours we will be listening to music from the 60s and the 70s. Tonight is a mostly vinyl show. Took a little trip down to a local vinyl emporium and actually came away with 3 brand new pressings of some Velvet Underground classics. So we will be getting into those shortly, but I found some other stuff there too. So coming up at 9 o'clock, we'll have the Earth First update at 10 o'clock. I think we'll just continue on with the music because it's all going to be sort of spotlighting. See how much of that Velvet Underground we can play tonight. You'll be absolutely amazed at some of the early stuff. Anyway, my voice is kind of gravelly. That's because I'm sick and ailing. So bear with me. I will talk as little as possible tonight. Just stay tuned to Free Radio and support Free Radio at www.freakradio.org.